Anton, hello, how are you?
Hello.
Morning.
We've made it, we finally got here.
Got here, man, yeah.
How was the driving?
Driving was okay. Took me all of about 2 minutes from the George to here, so plenty of time, just fell out of bed and straight into it.
Love it, mate.
With a few more of these meetings on a Monday morning.
Yeah, locked up the day.
That's it.
So people that don't know, obviously you are the gaffer of the George, which is not only a landmark for Birmingham City, but a landmark for Birmingham.
That's all right.
Tell us a little bit about it. So how long have your family been involved?
We've had it, well, it's Steve Bruce was the manager when we finished building it. Me and my dad, we were season ticket holders here. So I'm 44 now. We had season tickets since I was 14. And we had a business where we were sort of renting bedrooms, sort of bed and breakfast kind of stuff. And we seen the George up for sale. So obviously, we used to be down here every single week, customer-wise, the good old days, as it were, on the beer rather than serving the beer. So we seen it for sale and we thought, we'll have a go at this.
What would that have been, about 2006?
Something like that, yeah. I think Trevor was the manager when we bought it first.
Yeah. Was it the year we got promoted then, 2001-ish?
After we finished not all the building work, just when we'd extended all the bar and got the bar open. Steve Bruce, that was the season he got us up, first season.
Yeah. 2001, that was, yeah.
So we thought, we've made it, this is it. It's going to be like this every single week. And then obviously our first couple of seasons were just the Premiership and the sort of glory years and everything, sort of Savage, Seaside, Duke Gary, all that kind of stuff. So, you know.
You thought you'd hit the jackpot.
We thought we did the jackpot. We thought it'd last forever, but obviously... With blues, it didn't, you know, we sit in the hard times as well. But we started off, you know, sort of glory years and sort of prime time really with us as well. But yeah, it was a mad bomb really, because we knew sort of pub side of things, even with the football, that isn't going to be a 7 days a week kind of business. So we knew we'd be sort of quite good at selling hotel rooms. We knew city centre's only 5 minutes down the road and what have you, motorway, you're just at the end of Garrison Lane, turn right and you're up. So, you know, it'd be a good little spot to do it. And yet, when we were doing it, everybody laughed at us thinking, who's going to stop in a hotel in Small Leaf? These pair of idiots kind of thing. But we were always confident, you know, that we'd make it work, and not only make it work, that'd be what would sort of keep the business surviving. And then sort of as time's gone on, we've been proved right kind of thing. You know, when we were there first, I think there was the Sportsman down the road, there was the Garrison itself, Baines's is still there, the Victoria was up the road, the St Andrew's Tavern was the big one at the time. That's where everybody went on a match day. That used to be the big place everybody went. You never thought that'd go. That's obviously gone. It's like Paul's Delay, but you know yourselves, it was about 10 or 15. And then as the years have gone by, they've dwindled down. So I think there's just four of us left. And then the gig in the Rooster only just opens on a match day kind of thing. So, you know, they're building the hotel side of thing. That was, at the time, it seemed like a bit of a cracker's move, but it was the bread and butter, and it's what's sort of kept us going between the matches and kept it going. And then you see they're everywhere now with all these skyscrapers coming up now. Every skyscraper's got a hotel on it. So we're 20 years before our time even. Look at Gary Neville and Ryan Giggs with hotel football. It was like the George on a budget, then it kind of thing. Our budget was obviously a little bit different. We had to sort of scrape it out and we dragged it over the line at the end. But I mean, that was the idea of it, and it's proved to be successful for us, thank God.
How did you get on with the other pubs in the area? Is it a pub community, or is there a rivalry to try and get, or what's the...
You sort of feel each other's pain, do you know what I mean? You know what goes into being a landlord, and, you know, there's a lot to it. Put a stress on family life when you're watching the pennies, when the, you know, things aren't adding up and you're trying to get business through the door. It's
the last 12, 18 months with labour and everything.
It's hard to help with pubs. Your costs are always going up. Obviously, this area has changed a lot from where we had the George first, so your customers are sort of thinner on the ground and stuff like that. But I mean, we've always had a good relationship with all the gaffers that were in there previous. The only one that stuck out to me when we very first had the George. Your busiest time on a Saturday, 2 o'clock before 3 o'clock kickoff. So I was sitting there. So we said to me, the carling's gone, this is gone, that's gone. I thought, that's strange. So I was like, the gas is gone, change the gas. Went down, run out of gas, I hadn't ordered it, everyone. Oh my God. So I had another pub at the time, but it was in Toisley. So I phoned them up. I said, send me over a bottle of gas now, quick. But I knew in the traffic, it ain't going to make it before 3 o'clock. So I run down the road to the Sportsman just down the hill. I said, oh man, some from the pub up the road. Could you just borrow me a bottle of gas for an hour? I've got one coming. I'll bring it straight back down to you. Girl behind the bar said to me, nah. I said, you haven't got a spare bottle of gas? Nah. I said, he's like, nah. So I thought, you little cow, I can't believe you're doing that to me. So just as I was walking out, I seen old John McCarron. They were in the place. So I thought, might as well ask now. I said, mate, I said, I'm just in the shit. And I said, any chance you could help me out? He's gone to the gun. He went, go and get this man a bottle of gas now. And she went, could you come and give me home with it? She said, they're really heavy. I just went, no. So they were the owners. But since then, anybody who asks me for gas, I'm like, yes, you can have them, no problem. But again, we like the gaffers are in there. They've changed a lot as well. The only person who's sort of been there consistently is June at the cricketers. She's been there for a long time, but they all change a lot. I know Steve at Baines's, when his son got married, it was like a bit of a 4-day event, and we had a lot of his family stopping in there for 4 days, and then we used to have a pool team and play down there, so I know them too, but it's only really the four of us left, and a lot of them have sort of different gaffers. But it's the same anyway. We've got like another pub in Coesel, so you try and, although you're fighting for competition and stuff like that, generally you sort of have each other's backs and, try and help out when you can, kind of thing.
It's like you were saying before, weren't it, about there being enough business for everyone? When we were talking about kind of your relationship with the club over the years.
Yeah, well, I mean, to begin with, it was sort of the Golds and Sullivan and Karen Brady kind of thing. And when we were building that hotel, Jesus, because we had to, where the fan park is now, where that was a car park, they let us use that as sort of construction site and get it in. So we used to have to get the car park ready for a match day. And there was some match days we just used to look at it, just wincing, just thinking, oh no, kind of thing. And it went on. It took a lot longer than we anticipated, but they were good as gold with us, really. And then obviously, since Tom Wagner's been here as well, it's been a good relationship with them. We had a bit of a ding dong about the fan park. So obviously we only seen it sort of on the drawings. When you seen the drawings, it looked like we were going to be sat in sort of darkness the whole time. But I mean, there was lots of dialogue there. We had a couple of meetings with sort of Nick Smith, who's obviously doing all the stadium and stuff like that. Yeah. So we weren't massively happy, but we sort of, they made it work for us. We got a bit of signage out of them and a bit of lighting and stuff like that. So, they've been really good with us. But I mean,
So just discussing before off camera, the question you probably already put always get is, how has it affected trade of that nicking your business? Do you get the spill from that? What's your...
I'm so glad you asked that, because if I had a pound for every time I've answered it, I wouldn't need to sell bloody beer. I mean, I think everybody has this sort of conception that the fan park's been built, so all our customers just move next door into the fan park and we're sitting there like a ghost town kind of thing. But the difference is, prior to Tom Wagner taking over, so I mean, we had half the ground condemned for a bit, didn't we? So that was only a few years ago. It seems like an age away, but we were surviving on attendances 16 days and 17 days, and then
tops.
You'd be busy before the game. Everybody had been great. You, Matt, you go and watch 90 minutes of rubbish. Everyone come out and go, oh, forget this, I'm going home. Bad humour, no atmosphere. Carry on. Whereas now, the key to it is we're full every single week. And that's the difference. So instead of 16,000, you're looking 26, 27, 28, 10,000 more people. So...
And the genius of that, again, like we were saying before, isn't it, is the traffic infrastructure, and it was so bad But when 29,000, 28,000 people
come, exactly,
you can't all go home. So what you do? Go and have a couple of beers. And
that's exactly. Well, the thing is, I mean, the football's been improving as well. Kind of thing. So
you've got them staying back afterwards now,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, it's nice seeing people coming back with a smile on their faces and a bit of atmosphere and people looking forward to the next game kind of thing. And there's enough there for everybody. You go all around the stadium, you go everywhere. Everywhere's busy, good atmosphere. Everyone's looking forward to it. You know, I actually have people phoning me, can you get us any tickets? Can you get us any tickets? I mean, we used to have for 10 years, people would go, just put me ticket behind the bar. If anybody wants it, they can have it. And then I'd come back after the match, the ticket was still sitting there. You know, it wouldn't. It, you know,
a lot of gold dust, didn't they?
Well, this is exactly it now. But the feel-good factor's back. You know, you can see that we're sort of going places. And I think we're all Blues fans as well. As I'm always sort of a bit glass half empty with it. I think, yeah, I believe it when I see it. Whereas I think we're all...
Well, Dad, if you're waiting to wake up in the shower, aren't you? Good passing, and still the owner is in clink. We've got no signing. Christian Pedersen just got his 6-point deduction.
Well, I think we all know now that, you know, this is the real deal, and we're heading places now.
And I assume that with the fan park as well, and driving fans this side of the ground, and new fans that have come along, that it's opening their eyes to be like, oh, there's the George there. For people that don't know it. So it's driving more eyes to there. And I imagine, I've seen it before, the fan park gets full and quickly, and there's people that are around that will come, or people that will come to you first, then go in the fan park. Yeah. So it's just bringing more.
Of course there is, yeah. And it's, you know, after the game, sort of, people have their own little routine. You know, I see customers who come to us before the game, you won't see us after, because they'll go to such and such places, and then it sort of drops into that little routine.
You used to do some good Bernardo Sambucas after.
He's still with me. There's a line on here about, have you ever had to deal with trouble, or is it more family now? But the amount of times he's been rolling round and they've got us outside, head like this, someone.
That's my youth fan. It's all changed that.
Well, that's an entire podcast for itself. I tell you, I've got a three-hour special of Kev on the banana Zambucas. But I mean, back to that one. The only other thing that we've sort of noticed is we're getting a lot of sort of international customers in terms of the hotel and the pub as well. Korean customers, Japanese customers. Obviously, I'd imagine sort of following Pike or Iwata or different ones, that, so you can see sort of, you know, people.
I know, buzzing to stay there on a Friday night, get up on a Saturday morning, you're literally there, right?
Yeah, that's exactly.
And the day going away.
Yeah, and then I think we got a couple of little glimpses in the documentary as well there. So sort of people, you can see it sort of following through there. And obviously people are Googling it, we're right here. So, you know, it's that feel-good factor.
It's been dragged with the club and its global reach, haven't it?
Yeah, of course. And you can see that global reach, you know what I mean? We always had a Norwegian and a Swedish supporters club, but you can see it going a little bit further afield there now. Sort of each match you get ones and twos extra kind of thing. And, you know, that a lot of sort of the new sort of corporate stuff, obviously it's great, it's fantastic, but the traditional pub culture as well, that's sort of interlinked with football, and I don't think that's ever going to change. So I think when you see sort of people coming from abroad, they do want to experience the sort of the, you know, the traditional English sort of pub culture on a match day, as well as all the, you know, the street food and all the fantastic things that are going on. But again, like I said, there's that's there for all of us kind of thing. So it's just, you know, it's a good time. 23, yeah.
And then most of the time, so does the HS2 play into your hands as well, a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, we've had a lot of them there, obviously, because the construction site's just down the bottom kind of thing. But I mean, but Birmingham is a city, there's a lot going on, you know, all the time. I mean, this morning here now, if you think about the Blues, you just think a match day. Obviously, we're sitting here now, there's events going on to the left of us, to the right of us, there's people.
Sounds like there's a hen party going on, you get on.
We'll be in there after, yeah.
Yeah. That Fernando Sambuco.
Well, I mean, all of those different things. I mean, they'll probably have 200 or 300 people here every day doing various different events of whatever nature they are, conferencing, meetings, different things. So, you know, if we're picking up twos and threes from that, twos and threes from the other one, whatever's going on in the city, you know, it's not a huge ask to fill 23 rooms every day, and that's sort of what we do kind of thing. So.
To take us back then to those glory days, the early years when we were actually in the Premier League and semi-successful, what were your highlights that time? I assume you had some people through the door. you weren't expecting?
Yeah, well, I mean, we even still now, we get a lot of sort of the old players from that era kind of thing. I mean, Torsfield, Paul Devlin comes in a lot of the time. Paul Tate, before he was off the base, I haven't seen him for a while now. I think he's...
Heard him on the other week. Still class, isn't it?
Yeah, he's behaving himself now, so I don't see him as much. But Michael Johnson, my dad's sort of good friends with Michael Johnson, so we see sort of a lot of that here around there. So,
well, you always get served really quickly because he always had that really high jump, didn't he? Even though he's not, of course, somehow he outjumped the big lads.
One of the worst ones I ever seen in there, and it was just like a sort of tumbleweed moment. Jeff Horsfield was in there. So obviously when any of the players come in, everyone's like, do you want a drink? Do you want a pint? There's an oldish chap at the bar and he's going, Jeff, do you want a beer? He said, yeah, I'll have a lager or something like that. So one of my barmates said to this guy, she said, what are you doing buying him beer? She said, all the money he's on, all the money he's made, and you're a pensioner like you. You're buying him beer. She's disgusted. He should be ashamed of himself. The guy turned around and went, I'm his dad. We all just went, oh, okay, let's just move on.
You want to check the barrels? Go and check the barrels.
Get out of it quick. But I mean, some of that football's probably, since I've supported the Blues, that's probably the best football I've sort of watched. You know, that sort of team with them, Upson and Cunningham at the back, and Ceesay and Savage for that season in the middle, and then Dugarry and Torse and Devlin and
Force,
you know, for the Force as well. That's probably, I know, in terms of winning things we didn't, but in terms of, you know, every week turning up and expecting results, watching good football, playing good football, I mean, that was probably the...
Turning the Villa over.
I mean, that they were the two standout ones, really, weren't they? The Enkelman and Stone John, even at their place and stuff like that, they were the big ones, because that was what we were waiting for, the Villa was, and it had been, I'd never seen it in my lifetime at the time, even playing the Villa at all. And then we were obviously massive underdogs, so to come out, I mean, you talk about atmospheres, they were right up there, really. Yeah. Right up there.
Wow, that's what Grange was saying, wasn't it? The one those matches in the tunnel before.
Yeah.
The village did not want it, and he showed, didn't it?
Well, I mean, at the time when it was announced that the first one was going to be a night match, you just think, I have to police like this here now, because you know what everybody's going to do. They're going to be in the pub at 3 or 4 o'clock.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was the Battle of Rocky Line after, weren't it? And then it's going to see the police went, oops, probably shouldn't have done that.
But I mean, in terms of, like he said, I think winning it in the tunnel, I think the fans had a lot to do with that as well, because everybody was sort of 5 hours in drinking. We'd been waiting sort of 20 years to see it, and then it all come out on that night. And then I think that gave the team a bit of fire as well, you know. I mean, they're the kind of team that didn't need the fire, but I mean, they sort of come out and give it to them. On paper, we shouldn't have been anywhere near them, but you know, we're absolutely determined.
Mark Woods touched on it the other week that he didn't realise how much the rivalry was with Blues and Villa. Yeah. And is it home fans only in your
place? We do home fans only in our place, yeah.
Because I imagine that, yeah, some of the pubs that didn't do that, do you know what I mean? Not even for Villa, but for...
It was a square peg in town, wasn't it? I turned over. You just look at it, thing with that, though, and say, don't you? There's a rivalry, you Blues through and through, and you've got, you know, Villa is this and that, but you do that, turn for it, kick people's heads in, and then you're back at work with them on the Monday.
Yeah.
And you just kind of back, well, it's a strange dynamic, isn't it?
It is. Probably the only trouble I've ever had in the George, really, on a match day was we played, I think if it wasn't that season, it had been the following season, where we played Villa at Villa Park, and it was on the old Satanta Sports, but it was Irish Satanta Sports. You couldn't get it, but I had one of the Irish satellites for the Gaelic football. So we were absolutely jam-packed in there. Obviously, on a match day, people are out, but everyone was surrounded, sort of around the telly, so it's heaving. And somebody had brought his kids in with a Villa top, which, wow. You know, you can make of that what you will. You know, I know it's only children, but I wouldn't bring my my son into a pub next to Villa Park in a Villa top. And of course, just it only took one person to say something, and then it got a bit nasty. So, you know, it's like he said, we're all friends on the Monday, but that rivalry is...
You've got Blues fans then, but... Oh.
Yeah. And then you just need somebody to say, Mark, what did you say that for? And then, you know, it just escalates kind of thing. Just Blues and Villa together just don't mix. We're best. Yeah. Like oil and water, just keep it apart kind of thing, because it'll never end well with it.
Yeah, the kid's 6 points in. He's took his coat off.
8-year-old. Crappy do.
So what's your standout moment? Because my standout moment with your pub, it's a bit of a silly one for me because I missed the actual the end of the game.
Yeah.
But when Colton Cole curled that 25-yarder in there, the second leg of the semi-final,
yeah,
I've gone, oh, that's it. Oh, I can't believe this. And I've come out of here straight round to the George. And a couple of others did as well. We ended up watching West Ham, the end of the West Ham game,
yeah,
in the George, in the front. Yeah. And it was absolutely mental in there, weren't it?
It was. I mean, that was, without shadow of a doubt, the best we've ever done in terms of atmosphere, in terms of selling beer, in terms of, you know, the performance, everything.
Beer-wise,
obviously, I had a fair idea that, you know, this is going to be a busy, busy day. So I'd ordered a lot. I mean, without giving out the trade secrets, from sort of 5 o'clock, the kickoff was at 7:45, so... 5 minutes before kickoff, the whole pub clears out. So I walk around, watch the match, and then leave 5 minutes before the end to come back. And then the fairies have been, everything's cleaned, everything's bottled up, everything's, and then back to work. So when I was leaving, I thought, I'm just going to check this cellar because it seemed to be constantly changing barrels. Let's have a look.
Thinking about the gas thing.
The gas thing is like, I'm like a Vietnam War veteran with long gas flashbacks. I had the luck. We'd done 16, 22-gallon barrels of Carling in about 2.5 hours. So I had to phone up the other pub. I said, just get everything out now. Everything, send it up in a van. We got like 90 minutes to get here. And then obviously you think after the game's got to be result dependent. So the results obviously come, and...
I bet people party until Wednesday, Thursday, wouldn't they?
Yeah, well, I basically just left it until we run out of beer. At some point, it was just like every tap just sort of went, and just sort of, because I thought, I'm not ruining this party. This is a once-in-a-lifetime thing. Whatever the consequences are, I'll take that one on the chin tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
And it just run that bottles had gone, beer's gone, draft had gone, everything had gone.
Like a black Sambuca.
Kev had the
corner, no one drink.
Kev was like Gazza at 96 with the banana Sambucas. But and it's just
going that. Yeah.
I mean, the atmosphere is just, I don't think it'll ever be beaten. I mean, that really was just unbelievable.
Well, I was the ground, didn't I? But I don't know. So we have this joke that you obviously left, but it was probably the same buzz of you being in the George with them lot and me still being in the ground.
Yeah.
That it's just like every, it's all encompassing, isn't it? Everyone's just
I like to pretend it was the same, so what? No, but obviously, I'm quite
but it's to be honest, it's them little things sort of stick with you. Like when we won the cup, I missed Obafemi Martin's goal because I was sitting there, I was dying for the toilet the whole sort of half,
yeah.
And then it's got sort of time added on. I thought, oh, I can't hang it anymore. Nothing's happening now. This is definitely sort of time added on. So I was walking up the steps, heard this scream, turned back round, and everybody's celebrating. So they're your little things where you missed that. Yeah. I missed over Femi Martin's goal. Kind of thing.
For contrast, yeah, I'll put a bet on him next goal scorer while he was warming up. Well, it's £300 and we won the cup. On the winning ball, I was crying at the end. What a day.
We had when maybe the season under Lee Clark, where we stayed up with Cadiz's goal, the sort of 94th minute. Mm. I had it in the pub as well. And there's obviously a sort of slight delay on the telly. So the word's gone back. We've scored. And I was checking
for notification coming through.
We scored. Oh, we've got it. And we're sitting there watching it on the telly. And just at random, some bloke has just gone, 10. 9, and then the whole pub's joined in. You think there's got to be a bit of an anticlimax now. We'll get to 1 and we're still playing. Just at 1, we scored. The whole place erupted. I had to get the next morning, we had to get the cleaners in to clean the ceiling because there was, I think we had about 50 pints up there kind of thing. The lager wasn't so bad, but I could spot where the Guinness was, spot the Worthies, spot this kind of thing. So them little things, it, you know, it sticks in people's memory. And you, 20 years time, you'd be like, oh, do you remember all this? That? I remember
you know what? That's a big thing with pubs, isn't it? And obviously pubs are disappearing, right? Not something.
Yeah.
But especially for football fans or sports fans, it's an intrinsic part of the day. You do, you remember them, and they're lifetime memories, aren't they?
Of course you do, you know, and you could have, I mean, out of all Blues fans, you could have a revolving door here, and everybody will have their own little memory about when I've done this and this happened in this pub or that happened in that pub, and everyone's got their own little things, they're part of their life, part of their family life, part of their little story, and especially sort of with watching the Blues kind of thing, you know, generally we've had a million bad ones, but you kind of erase them from your mind kind of thing, but the good ones are few and far between for us, so they tend to sort of stick out.
Kind of. I don't want Man City just winning everything, do we? Because we want to make it hard for ourselves as a Blues fan. Does it help for you being a Blues fan in a Blues pub? Well, not help, but is it an extra? The seaside, he was cleaning beer off the ceiling and stuff. If you wasn't...
Misery loves company, doesn't it? Like those years where everyone's...
I bet some people would be like, oh God, the Blues fan. I don't think you could be here in the Sibiori and not be a Blues fan.
He wouldn't mind. I remember a long time ago, there was a place near Villa Park. It was a hotel for sale. So me and my dad, we just pulled up. We didn't even get out the car. We just went, nah, I can't do this. No chance. Doesn't make it like sort of blood money and it wouldn't work. I mean, for me at the George, it's a job, but on a match day, it's not. You know, I'm going in, serving people, having a crack, talking about the Blues, be it good, bad, or in the middle. You know, if it was Carson Young years, get everybody out, everything that's happening now, moving forward, you know, speaking about everything, just chatting away about Blues. It's not really a job. It's, you know, sort of, it's like being a customer for me, the other side of the bar, just without the beer, until about sort of 9 or 10 o'clock when I'm done.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, this was the biggest nightmare when we got the planning permission for the hotel, so it's two stories. So when the engineers come out, dig down to get the footings, you go, no, you can't build on that. Then they put, no, can't build on that. Long story short, Tilton Road used to be all the old back-to-back houses with the cellar and coal bunkers. So when they knocked them down, they just mass filled them. So we had to take out an extra 105 wagon loads on top of what we'd anticipated just to get down to clay footing. All the plans had to go back in terms of steelwork, calculations, everything. And it was just the foundations were that lower than the building that we ended up with just this huge space sort of below the pub. I mean, the footings are below that bar even further. That's what made it take so long kind of thing. It was just a real tear your hair out kind of moment kind of stuff. It just went on and on and on. And then we were just sat there with it and we're like, let's turn it into a pub. And that's brilliant. That was how
all of a sudden all that stuff, because I was standing outside traditionally after the gander.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck, that's right.
Yeah.
You're knackered, aren't you?
Yeah.
But all of a sudden now, you might stay another 3 hours.
Yeah, and that's it.
It's like a casino. You don't know what time of day it is.
That's
it. There, go up here. There's football on the telly.
It's one of the customers call it the Bermuda Triangle. You get in and you don't know how you're getting out. Yeah. That's it. Get any time. Yeah. Wait,
you know, on Sunday night.
Where am I?
Still in there. Yeah. Wednesday?
Yeah, it was a real strange one that, you know.
So it wasn't planned to be like?
No, far from it. And it was, I say, headache. It was absolute torch kind of things. Obviously, we were working to a budget at the time and that. That blew the budget kind of thing, you know, reapplying steelworks, reapplying calculations, going back to engineers, you know, then having to actually physically do it. It was a very hard job at the time. And then in the middle of it, my dad got cancer as well. So it was just sort of me flying solo. We had another business at the time as well, 6 1/4 acre industrial site with a bar and a lorry park on it and what have you. So it was a tough old time there, but we got there in the end. It felt like we never were at the time. It was real hard work, but I mean, we done it. I don't know how by hook or by crook we got there.
Yeah.
It was even we had there first. It was around the smoking ban as well. So we had the shell for what is the bigger bar now. We just let people in there. We just sweep up the building site, but you could smoke in there. So just built the bar. So it was basically a building site with a bar. It used to be packed in there because everybody could smoke. So even that brought a few little quid in. So it just kept the wheels turning.
Thinking, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean,
open use law is this. And
yeah, I think health and safety these days would be having an absolute nightmare with it. But it worked at the time.
You can't do this anymore. This isn't
Yeah, no, no.
Welcome back, fine.
No. This is only purely a building site at the time.
What do you, just an ad hoc question, what do you think of the pub trade now in 2025? We sit here, is the younger generation probably a non-drinking generation? What's your thoughts, just generally?
Yeah, it's strange. I mean, we sell a lot of non-alcohol beer now, which I never ever thought. I mean, even a few years back, if somebody sort of asked me for non-alcohol, I'd sort of look at them twice, thinking, you're in the wrong place, mate, have you done that?
Calibre's that blind.
That's it, yeah. You turn around and off you go. But when we sell an awful lot of it now, it's all age groups as well, do you know what I mean? It's not necessarily the younger generation. You see it right across the board kind of thing. In terms of the younger generation, I don't know. It's
not culture these days, is that?
I don't think it's the same pub culture as sort of we were in. You know, you sort of work all week in the pub Friday and Saturday. I don't think that's there for the younger generation at all. But, I mean, in terms of pubs themselves, even aside from that sort of culture, it's... You're seeing pubs close all the time, and I think that's just going to continue. You know, it's...
I think this is why you need to kind of embrace the non-alcoholic side as well, though, don't you?
Because
what you find, even like when we talked to Paul Tad the other day, and he was saying he's got to stay away from places now for his own benefit.
Yeah.
But even like, you know, yourself, you have like a little break from beer.
Yeah.
You don't want to not go to the pub then see him.
No, friends. Of course not. Yeah.
And even the stigma about it now isn't really there. And to be fair, the beers aren't bad either.
The beers were good.
The tang of a beer, even though it's not getting you a little bit intoxicated, it's still nice if you like to go to the pub.
Of course it is. And even just holding a beer in your hand. Mm-hmm. If you're in a pub and you're standing there holding a J2O, you might feel a little bit awkward standing there at least with a beer in your hand. And nobody bats an eyelid at it these days. And like you say, you know, we all need a little break from it now and again, or...
You don't want to lose the social aspect.
Of course you don't.
That makes it worse. And you're, well, I'm the bride for a bit, and I don't see anyone anymore because they're all in the pub.
Yeah, and I think the stigma of that's long gone now as well. Stigma of that's long gone. You can just sort of see it. And people previously, like you said, if you're off the beat, I'm not going to the pub. Whereas now, you do, you're not missing out on all that. Going to match day, you know, you can have a full match day without having a pint. You know, years ago, lot of people, you wouldn't consider going to the football without having a few beers, whereas now it's, you know, it's just part and parcel of it.
Yeah. So where do you see the future, obviously, with the Blues and the Sports Quarter's imminent, isn't it? So next 5-6 years, probably.
Yeah.
I know the dates get banded around, but realistically, no construction, it's not going to be 3 or 4 years, is it? But what's the plan, or how do you see the future for the George?
Well, again, that's another question I get asked all the time.
There you go. Stand to these now. Yeah. These, eh?
Oh, you just send people the links, then you just...
Yeah.
Just going to have a recorded message.
Buy this podcast on the telly in the pub on my side.
Look, I think sort of people don't realise how close it is. You know, it's... I know, obviously, we're extremely close to the stadium now. It won't be that close, but it's just where Camberbest is. It's going to be, I would imagine, 5-minute walk. So the distance in terms of where the stadium's going to be... We're still going to be the nearest pub that's around here. And, you know, I think if you asked any other publican in the country, would you like to have a pub 5 minutes from a huge sports quarter? And the thing with the Sports Quarter is it's, I suppose in a way, it's back to what we were speaking about with the fan park in terms of it's all relative, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? Instead of we were talking about 26s and 27,000s, we're now going to be moving into hopefully 50,000, 60,000. And then on top of that, I'm sure they're not spending £3 billion just for Blues every other week on a Saturday. You would imagine there's going to be a lot of other stuff on, be it other sports, concerts, NFL.
Mm-hmm.
And the sort of the big one that I've noticed before the sort of plans come out, I thought, I'm sure they're going to do it. And nobody really talks about it is the arena that they're building next to it. So there's the stadium, but they're building an arena that's going to be bigger than what's at Resorts World. I mean, the capacity of the arena at Resorts World is, I think, about 15 or 16,000. They're building an arena that's going to be 18 or 19,000, which will literally be directly across the road from us, which is a seven-day business. They're basically building the NEC across the road from us. I mean, that will definitely be, you know, something that is going to be huge. I mean, even if they were just doing that, I mean, you couldn't ask for any more. You know, the amount of visitors that will attract, And instead of, again, relying off 22 home games a season, we're going to be looking at 22 home games a season with, please God, 40, 50, 60,000 people on it. Then you're going to have this arena next year with potentially all the biggest artists in the world, different sports, even little things I see. I mean, obviously the NEC is quite a big part of our business. I mean, little thing like they had Horse of the Year show last week. Horse of the Year show, you can't get a hotel room in Birmingham. Little things like a cybercrime show. Have a look at this cybercrime show. I thought, who's going to go to that? There'll be many of that. It's about 100,000 people in Birmingham coming to it. So I'd imagine they're going to be attempting to attract all these kind of events.
There's enough for everyone, isn't there? If I put that there in AEC and the shows spread out, equal out, well, then the shows that happen in London and Manchester, maybe they come and it's easier, isn't it? Transport links.
I think they will. I mean, I think there's the full sort of plans of everything has been revealed, but as soon as the sort of first mock-up of where everything's going to be was placed, that was the first thing I had to look for, and that is a business within itself for the football club. Do you know what I mean? In terms of, you look at the money generated by Genting over at Resorts World, you would imagine that's a lot of income there. So, you know, I think if you put the whole football side of things to one side, I'm sure they'll be generating a huge amount of money for the club just through that alone. And then obviously all the sort of offshoots here and there, whatever other plans they've got. Mm-hmm. It's going to be exciting times for the city, kind of thing. And then in terms of us, we're 5 minutes across the road. Again, if we've only got 23 bedrooms to fill and, yeah, be it. And then in terms of the everything's got to be a 7 day a week kind of thing, so you'd imagine the footfall in that area, the trams going to be coming from the city centre. Just the initial plan was up where the club shop is going into the city centre, so when that comes through, basically the city centre has moved out to Broadsley Green, hasn't it? Well, of course it is. I mean, we're essentially city centre then, really, aren't you? You know, I can say jump on the tram, you're in the city centre, you know, and it's all there. So, you know, it's again with that, is I think people are thinking, oh, when it's open, that'll be it. You'll be brown bread. You might as well just knock it on the head. It's totally the opposite. You're, you know,
it's the side of the point, I think. It's nice to see that again. Nice to see the contrast, because that is the general consensus in there. Oh, what's going to happen to the letter of the George? It's not.
Yeah, it's not. I mean, it's.
You look at the wider, the bigger picture, the actual height of the economy.
Yeah, it's the glass half full, like the glass half empty. Yeah. What is it like? Oh, go, well, you can have that then. You're just thinking, cha-chink. Does he do get everyone sexually? Yeah. Coming outside and being like,
that's it, yeah. I
mean, that's there. Let's pop in the George for one before we go there. So that
you imagine they're having, I don't know, take that, or I mean, just going based on was it, take that and PK, we're on at Resorts. Well, there you get 15 to 20,000 people across the road going to that,
yeah. Or you get that all sort of year coming,
that's it, exactly. So you know, you had it,
right, yeah. And people are like, oh, well, yeah, we're coming from London to watch Take That or Coldplay or whatever, exactly. Right.
Sorry, not get the horse of the year,
coming, yeah,
the actual. The crowd. Yeah. Well, I imagine, you know, it's a horse, yeah. A horse walked into a bar.
But that's same sort of way. It's not how we see it. That's what's gonna happen. Do you know what I mean? You've got that across the road from me. If you've got 20,000 people come to a concert, if there was 150 come across the road for a few beers and 23 of them come and stop in the hotel, you're laughing, and I don't think that's sort of unachievable based on those kind of numbers. And then I'm sure the sort of full plans haven't been revealed by the club, but I'm sure they've got a lot more up their sleeve than sort of any of us can imagine. So I would imagine there's going to be huge activity in this sports quarter, even the football side of things with all the pitches in the academy and various different things there. I'm sure there's going to be an awful lot of.
That's it. You've got the women's teams and the youth teams, and then obviously whatever happens with this, haven't you?
So that leads me on to like a bit of a two-part question then. Has there ever been any chat between Blues to a divulge as much as you want, but kind of buying you out and them seeing that as a something that they can build upon?
Yeah.
And then when this goes then and we go to the sports quarter, is there being talked then for you to have a bit of that to make more hotel rooms to expand?
There's been a few sort of subtle nudges, I think, from our behalf too. I wouldn't, in terms of obviously the capacity and what's happening, I wouldn't mind a little bit of that land there. I'm sure they wouldn't mind having a little bit off the corner for us there, but that's not something I think obviously the club have got sort of Well, I think the club have got bigger issues at the minute in terms of designs for the stadium, sort of all the infrastructure and what have you kind of thing. So maybe that's a discussion for the future, but that'd definitely be something we'd be interested in kind of thing. And then obviously depends what happens with here as well, is nobody knows what's sort of going to end up on here. I think that from what you can gather from little bits in there, it's going to be sort of housing of some form or other.
Which is, yeah, he's an audience for you, isn't it?
Of course.
Has anyone ever knocked on the door and said, how much? Have you ever been tempted to say, give us $100 million?
$1 million, I'm going to admit it.
Surely that's a conversation that's, that might have been having here to, like, all right, well, the George does all right. We could.
I think everything's got its price, hasn't it? You know, and even if it wasn't the football club, obviously, where we are, you know, there's a sort of lot of big sort of companies nationwide who would be looking at a site like what we've got and looking at the you know, the potential of it there. So everything's got its price. But it, I mean, it'd be difficult for us because it's our business. Like I said, everything's got its price, but it's a bit more than the business to us. But me and my dad are season ticket holders. You know, my dad's father passed away when he was four. So they had a farm in Ireland. So they had to move. They couldn't afford to keep the farm. They had to move to Monica Road in Smallleaf with my auntie. So she lived in a three-bedroom house. They had five children and a husband. And then my nan and another four kids turned up on top of it when he was four. So I think he was his next door neighbour, and my dad will kill me if he's watching this for forgetting his name, because I must have heard this story a million times, but his name just escapes from it, doesn't it? But I think he felt a little bit sorry for them. So the one day he says, come on, we're going off to watch the Blues. So he started to take him up to watch the Blues. So that was the story of my dad got into watching the Blues just for, it was about.
What are we talking? What kind of years we're talking?
Oh, it's dad now, he's 73, so we're talking about 68 years ago.
So thankfully, Blues probably had half a decent team then, so it was an actual cheer-up.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. So he sort of seen sort of Trevor and his heyday and all of them ones that sort of before my time, but that was the sort of story how he got watching the Blues. Then obviously I went to school at Holy Family in Smallleaf as well, so this was sort of my growing up area as well kind of thing, and I got into it and I've drilled into my son now, and my son's going down the same road, kind of thing. So, yeah. So in terms of the actual business, it's our business, but also it's sort of our life. It's the Blues. Right. Yeah. It's all sort of intertwined all together, kind of thing. So it's a bit more.
I'll stick another zero on the offer.
Yeah.
When Tom Bagg is watching this, he'll be like, okay. Watch this guy as well.
Send to get the check.
Okay. Your thought, you old man ever talk about a lot. Did you ever foresee, obviously you look at things in business with a keen eye and with an optimism.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea that you get to the point that you're at now and on the precipice with the club?
You never know with Blues, do you? You know, we have so many sort of false dawns. I think everyone was sort of the opinion that Sullivan and Gold had taken us as far as they could. Then obviously Carson Young comes in. We think, oh yeah, we've got ourselves a little billionaire from abroad. And then we all know how that story ended. And then again with that, I mean, we thought, would it ever end? Where's it going to go? And then we've got new owners. And then I think.
And then Lawrence Pessini's phoning in talks.
Rooney guys, six managers we had in one season.
Well, this was it. And then you think with us, every time we sort of one step forward and then we seem to shoot ourselves in the foot. But I think this is the one time now where I think the tables are turned on us. You know, we've had our spell in the doldrums, and I think we're heading the right direction. I think with, you know, some of the football we've seen last season, the investment in the players, some of the football we've played as well. I know it's been a bit of a rocky start to the season, but that's the Championship, and I'm sure, you know, yeah,
in the world.
Of course it is. Mm-hmm. Of course,
yeah. Do you ever have to tell anyone's pod down when they're talking nonsense regarding Dag is going all players, going all he's no good all of a sudden just because we're finding our level in the Championship? Do you hear it all in that?
Oh, it's some absolute top quality bullshit, and there's no other way of saying it. But it's generally, you can spot the difference. Your season ticket holders and the people who know about it sort of know the sense. It's generally the odd one here who's had too many beers and sort of thinks they're an expert and probably won't come until next Christmas because they've come for the one game. You know, anybody who sort of watched it week in, week out knows how difficult it is. Even when we walked League One last season, that wasn't, people just sort of take that as a given. That was a big achievement. You know, League One, there's been far bigger teams than us who spent far more money than us who didn't get out of there. You know, you look at Forests and Wiggins and Sunderlands and different ones over the years.
Bolton's still down there, aren't they?
Bolton's still down there. There's a lot of teams, you know, just everyone just seems to think, oh, well, yeah, walking League One, that was a given. We'll move on to the next thing. It's not as easy as that. And I think some of the performances this season haven't been great, but it's not going to happen overnight. But I mean, he even said that, what are we, 5 points off second or something like that?
That's it. And we're going to... Yeah. What if we win two games in the first game?
I think, you know, little things like Kyogo. I think if he could just get a goal, I think he'll get a skip.
And then he rattles one in like that and it's rolled
out. It's rolled off, guard, yeah. See, this is it. And you can see that...
You'd be more worried if he wasn't getting in those positions to get the chances. And yeah, but he's just all nerves and excited.
You can see Damari Gray as well. You can see them bits of quality. There's a lot more to come from a lot of them, you know. I think once we get a couple of games in, get a few goals, I think we'll be okay.
Well, bloody international breaks, yeah.
Yeah, but with last season, we signed Stansfield, didn't we? And everyone's in League One, a £15 million player is a big deal, isn't it? In this division, most teams have got one. Most teams have got three or four.
See, this is...
There's five on the bench, yeah.
But I think when was on about when we stayed up under Lee Clark, Cadiz's goal, we were obviously four from bottom that season. And I think the team that finished sixth, there was only 12 points between playoffs and us, four from bottom. So that's how tight the championship is, and that's the way it always is. You know, that's not going to change, kind of thing. And
Christ, leading the world, isn't it?
Of course it is, and I don't think that nobody's going to run away with this league. And if all you need to do is 3, 4, 5 good results on the spin, you're up there. Everything sort of changes, kind of thing. So you know, we're still battling away, and I think anybody who's pressing the panic button now needs to have a little look at themselves.
Relax. Enjoy.
So what would you say to someone who's never been in the George on a match day? What would you encourage you, encapsulate it in a...
Watch out for Kev outside. He's had a few yellows.
that was the premiership.
Expect the unexpected is what I'd say. Yeah. Expect the unexpected. Anything can happen at any given moment in time.
Have you ever had Matt Mallet come in?
I used to have him on the streets across the road doing his little dancing. He's got a big lock sort of staff now, kind of thing. Yeah,
need to get him on a podcast, don't we?
Oh, that'd be an interesting episode, I think.
Lord of the Rings wizard now, he swings that stick around. I wave at him and say, well, every time I drive home from when we do this on a Monday, he's up by the crossroads now, isn't he, by the Emerald? But yeah, I always make sure to say hello. As I'm pulling off, I don't want that stick.
Yeah, you're always on like, whether he's just going to... Yeah. You or
wouldn't love it on a red light. You wouldn't want to stop too long, but
I'd
again, he's a landmark of Birmingham. Isn't
of
it?
Course, he's. I'd pay good money to see him.
Think when you're bringing up the sports court and getting a new stick.
I think he could have a statue the same as Trevor's at some point with his stick.
The prize start being on at half time. Get him with the community.
George on a match day, just expect anything at any given point in time. You know, the atmosphere is always in there, it's brilliant. To be fair, the guy Alan, who's our DJ, he is hilarious as well. He's really funny and he pulls no punches with anybody. We had we're at home on Boxing Day last year and he's gone. Long hair, long beard. And this was a hotel guest who came in to check in with his like suitcase and everything. So obviously he wasn't a football fan. He's looking around and it's gone, hello everybody, Jesus is here. He had a great day yesterday. And the whole bunch is like, oh Jesus, yeah. He's gone. He's trying to check in and he was cracking all the Jesus jokes and he's gone, he's parked his cross up outside if we'd all make sure that's nice and safe for him. So I mean, it could be anything and anything kind of thing. Brilliant. And again, with that, he said to me, he says, this woman here, she said, I should do this professionally. He said, I am doing this professionally, you cheeky girl.
You ever thought about it? She's quite good at it. Yeah.
So we see some sides, you could see ex-players. You know, the atmosphere this last couple of years has been excellent. Now it's back to sort of singing and, you know, people up on people's shoulders and stuff like that. The odd flare goes off from time to time still, so you might get a random fire alarm going off, so at least you know they all work. As soon as the flares go off, fire alarm goes off.
Testing them out.
Yeah, that's how I test
them. You can just use a manual call point.
I just save it for a Saturday, just go, mate, just let one of them off, would you?
So finally then, so what's your hope for the future, for the pub, for the club, for the community? Obviously we're big on community of blues.
Yeah.
But just what does it all mean to you I know we've talked quite personally, but on personal and a business level?
I mean the personal and the business level are sort of two intertwined kind of things. So I mean I think if we follow the path that we're going now, I think we're heading in the right direction. Everybody does with the sports quarter. I think with me as well, I'm sound like an old man now, but a lot of that's tinsel to me. I'll come to the football to watch the football. Do you know what I mean? I know that obviously generating revenue means buying players and all that, but to me, it's what you see on the pitch. And I think we've got the right mentality of now investing in players, want to be successful on the pitch. And we're not sort of putting the horse before the cart. You can see everything is a very clear plan, very clear setup, and hopefully that will bring us back to the Premiership. And I'm sure in the Premiership, that's not going to be the end of it. We want to sort of be looking at trophies and cementing ourselves. And I always think, if them 11 men do the business on the pitch, then off the pitch, I'll do the business, the club will do the business, all the local pubs will do the business, everybody will be happy, you know, all the tills are ringing, everyone's got a smile on their face, and that sort of success on the pitch breeds success off the pitch. And I think as long as we don't sort of lose sight on that, I don't think we'll be far wrong. And I know obviously that you have to build these things to increase the revenue now with all the financial fair play and various different rules and that. But I think in the big scale of things, as long as we don't lose what goes on the pitch, that's what we're all here for. You know, it's great having all the lovely facilities, and it's great having different foods and the different entertainment that's going on match day. But match day is 90 minutes, 3 o'clock. We want to see it's
winning. Business, isn't it?
It is. And the thing is, when that's working, everything else falls into place. When that doesn't work, it's surprising how quickly it can go sour and go the other direction. But I think with the people we got in charge now, and with Davies as well, and with the sort of squad we got, and I'm sure we'll be, that's not something we're just going to sit on. That's going to be sort of constantly improved. And I don't think there'll be anybody resting on their laurels or anybody sort of outstaying the welcome who aren't performing the way they should be. As long as that keeps pushing the right direction, I think everything else will fall into place. I know it's easier said than done, but we're on a little bit of a crest of a wave at the minute. So while that snowball's rolling down the hill, it just keeps on getting bigger. And I think now's the time to just keep on pushing it and keep on pushing it. And I think it's exciting times for Blues, exciting times for the city, and hopefully exciting times for my tills.
So what's the discount code for Saturday if anyone comes here and says get £3?
Just say, that'd be fair.
Yeah, the password's mongoose.
Well, no, the Voice podcast then as well. So that's a good listening thing. Well, thanks for your time, man.
You're welcome. Thanks for the invite, lads. Thanks for the invite.
Look forward to coming down the George weekend.
I suppose we better get a few pints, aren't we?
No, so
cheers, mate.
Cheers, lads.
Thanks.